Yes, hello. Do come in and a warm welcome along to the very first episode of You, Me and Web3, a podcast sponsored by the Web3 tech company Forge. We have a genuine cracker to get the series going as we're joined by Hollywood royalty Donald Kushner and Mike Bonifer. My description of their career simply wouldn't do them justice. So at this point, I'm going to hand over for the introductions, starting with you, please, Donald.
My original background is in Boston, and I was involved with theater and producing stage plays. And I moved out to California in the late 70s and opened up an animation studio in Venice, California, where the first movie I made was with the Saturday Night Live crew. It was called Animal Olympics. And at the time, we also developed the movie Tron, which we made, and it was released in 1981. So, and from there, my background went in independent filmmaking and in television. In television, I was the first to reconnect with reality shows, doing 860 episodes of Divorce Court, and got involved with 30 television movies and the first hit series on HBO called First and 10. And, you know, I was a pioneer. When I first got started in television, there was three networks, and then there was the fourth, which became the Fox Network. And then there was all the multiple basic cable and paid cable channels. So, and my career then went into independent filmmaking. I produced and distributed, you know, 75 to 100 movies and started the career of Renee Zellweger, Reese Witherspoon. I did movies with Keanu Reeves and also I did the independent film Monster, where Charlize Theron won the Academy Award. So my career has been in the entertainment business and all forms of entertaining. And it also includes exhibition. I owned and operated the Chinese Theater, and I owned and operated Two Bunch Palms, which was a iconic hotel in the desert here in California. So that's briefly my background, and I'll talk about getting into Web3 as we go along.
Wonderful. Thank you very much indeed, Donald. Mike?
I took a slightly different path than Donald. I grew up on a farm in the Midwestern United States. It's a small family farm that my father, for his entire life, tried to turn into a theme park built around rescue horses. So it's no surprise that I ended up at Disney, because I grew up in a theme park on a very small and not always successful scale. But it was quite an adventure, and got out of college and went to work in the corporate world and realized that what I was meant to do was be a storyteller. And I started writing. I actually started writing from where I was stationed by the corporate world in what I call the most appropriately named town in the United States, Effingham, Illinois, where I was miserable. And I started writing letters to a friend about how miserable I was. And that friend told me that he would gather an audience to read those letters. And everybody thought they were funny and fantastic. And I thought, well, okay, I'm just going to keep writing. And I moved to Chicago and got started as a writer and put together a small portfolio. And I asked a newspaper columnist whether I should move. I said, I'm going to move to New York or LA. And he asked me a bunch of weird, you know, kind of questions about astrology and whether I was a beer drinker or a scotch drinker. And he said, you should move to LA. And I said, all right. I didn't know it was a coin flip for me. So I moved to LA, and somewhat miraculously, I got a job with Disney. And one of my very first assignments at Disney was to work on the film Tron, which is where I met Donald and that whole team. And it was a life-changing event to experience Tron. And really, I've been trying to replicate that experience ever since. I think we'll get into how we're doing that with Cryptosaurs. But I became a storyteller and, you know, learned from the masters at Disney and got into the uses of improvisation. I spent a lot of time studying and performing improv and taught improv for business for 10 years in the early 2000s, and then became familiar with a body of work called quantum storytelling, which we can get into in this conversation. But I am one of the world's leading practitioners of quantum storytelling. And so I'm bringing that practice to the creative work and the storytelling that we're doing with Cryptosaurs. It's where I am today. It's been a twisted but rewarding path.
Thank you both. Donald, you mentioned Cryptosaurs there, and it's a project you're working closely on with Forge. What can you tell the listeners about that?
Well, Cryptosaurs is about reimagined dinosaurs come back to planet Earth to help mankind get along with each other and get along with the environment. The history of Cryptosaurs starts with Tron. Tron was the first movie that gave a depiction of the metaverse. The electronic world is the metaverse and was the metaverse then. Characters in the electronic world became the first avatars. There was a battle in Tron between the mainframe computer and the personal computer, and this is the first instance of the future of Web3. So that's where it all started. There is some interesting notes. In 1981, a guy named Hal Finney worked on the Tron video game when he was at Atari, and Hal Finney later became, under the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, and was the first recipient of Bitcoin. So, you know, so Tron was a revolutionary movie in the sense that it foretold the metaverse, it foretold avatars, it foretold Web3. So what we've been working on is to create a new Web3 studio. And with that is using our entertainment background for many years, is creating a Web3 studio where people can participate in the creation and also help build a studio where the stickiness comes from the amount of eyeballs. And the amount of eyeballs comes from entertaining people. So that's what we intend to do with Cryptosaurs, is entertain people in this reimagined metaverse.
And I would imagine, Donald, that there's some similarities between Tron in 1981 and Cryptosaurs, the 2023 version?
Well, in Tron, we were the first film to use computer animation. And at the time, we contacted every computer animation studio in the country and took their whole output for a year. You know, today, probably that could be done on a personal computer in probably, you know, within a day. So that is, you know, and so what's changed now is all these AI applications for the creation of art, Midjourney and DALL-E and Stable Diffusion. So we're using this new AI technology the way we use computer animation in the past to create characters, to create backgrounds, and to create a whole new world. So there is a lot of similarities what we were doing on Tron and what we're doing with Cryptosaurs.
I think the next question is probably one for you both to tackle, and it's, why have you chosen now to take that step into Web3, the metaverse, and so on? And just how much planning goes into a project like this before it becomes public knowledge?
I think you trust Donald Kushner's gut on when to make moves. And you heard from his career description how many moves he's made in at the right time. And so, you know, we've been working on this for a couple of years, but the timing is right because it stirs something in your gut. You can't think these things into existence. There's no intellectual reason or perfect rationale or McKinsey generated strategy. It's what you feel. It's a pulsing that goes on in the networks that you built over whatever the time span is. And I think we felt that, and certain things started to come together for us we started to see connections in our networks. People started to show up at the appropriate time. John Sheely, our partner in this project, being one example, he has got a deep history in paleontology. He grew up in a museum. His father was the director of the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. His family would go on dinosaur digs on their family vacations, and he and his brothers would compete to see who could discover the most dinosaur bones. And it's exciting to hear him talk about it because he's excited talking about it. And we had a bunch of stories circling around about dinosaurs at that point. And we thought, you know, what better place if we're going to talk about evolution and the beginnings of things like we are with Web3 and the metaverse, what better place to start than with the rebirth and the reimagining of dinosaurs and with a body of work and knowledge like John Sheely. So that's one example. And at that point, it just becomes putting the pieces into place, you know, storytelling, which, you know, we've been informed by a lot of science, a lot of the quantum storytelling process, character designs through AI, you know, market analysis, keeping an eye on what's happening and timing with that. And then you get into the creation of the social media channels and the website and the game mechanics, not only for the development of games, but the game mechanics that we use to invite community participation. And then, as Donald mentioned, the actual design of a Web3 studio. So if we're to decentralize content, what would a decentralized studio look like? And that's become one of the overarching questions for the project right now is, you know, if this is a Web3 studio and Cryptosaurs is the first franchise property, the first IP to come out of that Web3 studio, what is the design of that studio? And how can we decentralize the whole concept of an entertainment studio?
And Mike, I appreciate that this is probably a long-winded question, but if anyone can tackle it, it's certainly you. How would you describe quantum storytelling to people who might not be familiar with what it is? What's the link to Cryptosaurs? And how might quantum storytelling play out in the world of Web3?
All right. So what you've just asked me is to put 1,000 pounds of potatoes into a 5-pound bag.
Come on, Mike, we've only got half an hour. Come on.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to try to, I'm going to first shortcut it by saying anyone listening who has taken an improv class or performed improv will have an intuitive understanding of quantum storytelling because it is collaborative storytelling. Is a way for a community to come together and quickly arrive at a narrative or narratives that will help make sense of the world. You know, as human beings, we are designed to make sense of the world with stories, but we all have different stories. And so, you know, we can't rely on a dominant narrative, on a top-down narrative, on an imposed narrative, or a scripted narrative. We have to create stories as communities. And that has never been more important than it is today. So at its essence, quantum storytelling is a way for community to share and create stories. And I'll give you two of the theoretical concepts that we put into play. One is called anti-narrative, A-N-T-E, narrative, one word. And the meaning in quantum storytelling is what comes before a story. So before there's a story, what exists? And it's really fragments of stories. It's a network has infinite beginnings, middles, and ends of stories coursing through it at any given time. And these anti-narratives tend to take four forms: linear, cyclical, spiral, and assemblage. And without getting too much into it, I'll say that the emergent forms are the spiral and the assemblage. Mm-hmm. The others are static. And so when Pixar makes a film, it's a linear story. It's always going to be 90 minutes. It's always going to have the same beginning, middle, and end. And they're always going to use the same process to create that story. By contrast, the emergent story forms, spiral and assemblage, have properties that are unique to networks and they're emergent. So they take different stories in these forms can take different shapes. They can hold their meaning well, whether they're 30 seconds long in an elevator pitch or whether they're 2 hours long on a plane ride next to a passenger that you're going to describe, or in a movie theater. Uh-huh. So we're focusing on the emergent forms of stories because that's what networks thrive on. And we harvest those stories for purposes of entertainment and connection with community. The other thing I'll touch on real quickly is that we use game structures as what we call story engines. So we have a particular model for using game as a kind of engine that we can agree on a structure for collaboration, and stories will emerge through the quote-unquote playing of these games. And those are two of the many elements that go into quantum storytelling that we are putting into effect with Cryptosaurs.
Mike, and in record time, thank you for that. I knew you'd crack it. Skeptics, there are, though, and there's a few. What would you say to people who don't think Web3 in the metaverse is going to last the distance?
So we're in it. Like, what makes us think differently is look around us. You know, my granddaughter, Rosie, 4 years old, she wrecked her family's television. She was watching The Grinch That Stole Christmas over the holidays. And she took a broomstick to the TV because The Grinch needed to be struck down. And she, you know, The Grinch, in her mind, there was no boundary between that TV and what was in the room. And you see young people with phones. And I, you know, so I believe that we're living in it, number one, and how it will all play out. You heard Donald talk about the proliferation of networks, how when we were just coming up, there were three networks, then four. Now there's a proliferation through streaming.
Yes.
The networks are going to be very ad hoc in the future. That it's not, if you look at what three networks is to now, think of what now will be to the future. There will be millions of networks in Web3. Those networks will be ad hoc networks. Some of them will last a week. Some of them will last a long time, like Wheaties, you know, cereal. And it can't matter to us. What matters is, you know, can we participate in a way that's profitable and productive and rewarding for us as a community or as a culture? And, you know, how can we structure these networks in order to support and engage our communities? And so, you know, the ability to, and we believe that story is going to be at the absolute epicenter of these networks. Stories and entertainment are what will help, as they always have, will help the cultures and the communities form around these networks.
And I hope you weren't given the bill, Mike, for the damage to the television, were you?
No, thank goodness. I didn't get it. Not yet, anyway. It's still early in the game.
We'll be sure to keep an eye on that one then, Mike. And Donald, what's the incentive to anybody who is listening to get involved in the Cryptosaurs project?
The user will be able to participate. There will be... we're open in the Web3 studio to other people's ideas and through smart contracts and other forms of following what people create. They can participate in the upside. So they have the creativity and we've created.
I want to add something, Donald, let me add something to that on the creative part of it. I have a friend named Dave Spafford. He's known in the animation industry as Spaff. And he's the youngest animator in the history of Disney animation. He didn't go to college. What his mother would do when he was 14, 15 years old is drive him up to the Disney studio from Orange County. And he would stand outside the studio in the mornings with his little portfolio of art that he had drawn. And he knew the animators by their faces, the older animators, and he would call out to them. And little by little, these older animators, you know, he got a few of them to take a look at his portfolio and they go, well, the kid's got talent. Come on in and watch me work. And he started spending his summer days at the studio apprenticing when he was 14, 15, 16 years old. And, you know, he got hired when he was 18 to join the animation staff, just skip college completely. And I think that's a microcosm of what's going to happen. But you're not going to have to stand outside the Disney studio physically in Burbank. You're going to be able to expose your work to I Know for Cryptosaurs on our network and get mentored by experts, by specialists in their fields, and get invited, if you're talented enough, get invited to participate. So sorry to interrupt, Donald, but I had a story I needed to tell.
No, I think you should talk a little bit more about the mentor program that we've created. So you started it, you might as well finish
okay.
it.
Okay. So Tom, when we started talking about this studio and Donald started saying, you know, let's think of this as bigger than one intellectual property or franchise of Cryptosaurs. Let's think of what else could come of it. It opened up a lot of doors for us. We started getting interest from groups that wanted to create, I would call them professional development programs for creators in the Middle East and elsewhere, using Cryptosaurs as the initial project-based learning. And yeah. At that point, when we started getting that kind of interest, I made some phone calls, and we both did, to the creative team behind Tron and other people in our network. I made 14 phone calls, and we got 14 yeses that people from Tron, Star Wars, Batman, Blade Runner, people on the faculty at UCLA, people who have taught at USC in the film school and other places like that, they all were enthusiastic about becoming mentors to this program. They don't want to get involved in the day-to-day, but one thing that's missing in the Hollywood studio system of today is mentorship. And when Donald and I were working on Tron at Disney, mentorship was very strong there. You could always find someone whose history was relevant to what you were doing in the current day. For example, you know, Disney itself was built on technological evolution. Everybody knows about Mickey Mouse and the theme parks and the animated classics. The breakthroughs were technology oriented, and Walt was ready with stories that would exhibit or take advantage of those technologies, beginning with sound and color in cartoons, you know, audio animatronics and robotics in the theme parks, and, you know, visions of the future that, you know, would be shared, future technologies that would be shared at Epcot. So there have always been, and even Tron, you know, the breakthrough with CGI. So, you know, we feel like we're coming together with the right kind of storytelling at the right time for a significant breakthrough in with Web3 and AI. And Cryptosaurs is the project, and we will have mentors the likes of which cannot be replicated by any other Web3 project. There is no one that will have a mentorship program the quality of ours. I had lunch on Friday with Harrison Ellenshaw. He is a third generation entertainment creator, and he worked on Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. He was the matte painter and ran the visual effects department at Disney. And so he is one example of one of the mentors. Bill Croyer is another one, created and directed Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, was president of the animation division of the Motion Picture Academy for 10 years, super connected in the world of animation, semi-retired, but eager, and is a great teacher and eager to help out. So we have a really unique offering for people that are joining our community and have a creative instinct about them and a desire to get involved in Cryptosaurs in that way.
You've both given some world-class examples of creativity because you're both very creative in what you do. How do you think Web3 will impact the process of creativity, and what are some of the opportunities for creators?
Well, Mike, I think you can speak to the two series that we've created, and because they're entertaining and they're educational, they're play to earn, play to learn. So Michael, I'll let you talk about the contents of those two series.
So sure. You know, when you think about, we're primarily interested. So there's two types of people that will join our community, and Donald mentioned the investor. So there's people that believe from an investment standpoint, that acquiring an NFT or a set of NFTs will pay off in a purely financial way. And that's great. So think of that. And look, I always say, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been.
Right.
And one of the things that Web3, actually, I'm quoting a philosopher friend named Barrett Holmes Pittner. I should give him the credit for that quote. But I say it all the time. I only read it like 3 or 4 days ago in a book that he's written. And I just think it summarized something that I've been looking to say about Web3 and, you know, how we articulate where we're going. And you've got to know where you've been. And so where we've been is in a centralized studio system with a certain way of accounting for royalties or residuals. And even the equity in a studio, you know, who invests in a studio? Who has Disney stock, for example, and how did they get it? Those ways will change, and they are changing, and already have changed significantly for some investors. For creators, the same thing will be true. There was a set way for portfolios to get reviewed, for people to get access to studio, to participate in a children's animated series or a streaming series on Netflix or Hulu or any of the big networks. Those ways will become decentralized. And that's really where Donald and I and our team get super interested in what the community has to say. So we have the bare bones of Beasties, the children's animated series that Donald mentioned. And we don't want for ourselves any more than the bare bones. We want the community to tell us which direction the story should go, you know, what the wardrobe might be on a character, we're going to create the series in multiple languages. So who the voices will be. And we have the mechanisms to narrow it down to, let's say, here are the finalists, right? And instead of sitting in a room in a very exclusive environment in Burbank, California, or New York City, or London, and having all the power to decide the fate of, you know, a voice actor, mm-hmm. we're going to let the community make those choices. But we'll get the 3 or 5 people to the finalist stage. Our network will allow that to happen. And the same is going to be true with every creative choice along the way. So the Beastie series is about a young girl. This is the American version, who grew up in New Orleans. She's 9 years old. Her name is Tika. And she's kind of on her own. Her mom is a very busy nurse. We only ever see her mom on a phone. She's got an older brother who's trying to be a musician. He's 13. He has no time for her, like all 13-year-old brothers have no time for their 9-year-old sisters. And her dad is a musician, but he performs at night, so he's got time during the day. When she has a problem, he tells her a story using a little figurine of a set of that she's got in her bedroom that they call Beasties. And these are reimagined dinosaurs. That's where we come in. We have the designs for those. At that point, she goes into the animated world, and the Beasties are real. The dinosaurs are real. And they help her solve a problem. She has to confront her real world problem in the imaginary world. That's all we've got, and that's all we're going to have. The community is going to tell us everything else about that series, what the episodes are going to be, what kind of problems Tika is going to face in the world, which Beasties are going to help her and how. All of those are choices, creative choices that we can decentralize. And I'm not going to go into as much detail on the streaming series. The streaming series is called Cryptosaurs. We have likewise given it a bare bones narrative framework. And our community is going to play the roles and have the voices, which will let us know which direction it's going and what that series is going to become. We have no bias in that regard. We're completely open to what it can become. And if we have, you know, community that's global with huge, you know, multicultural influences coming to bear, it will be a series unlike anything we could imagine on our own. And that's what we want. We want something, you know, it's not my story or your story, it's our story, because our story is one that neither one of us could imagine on our own. And that's where the gold is. when you get in, and that's where, you know, real creativity resides.
Just following on from that last question then, Donald, there's a lot of discussion around the future of IP ownership and how NFTs will herald a new era of community governance that removes control. Does any of this scare you in any way, especially coming from that more traditional side of Hollywood?
Well, it doesn't scare me because I've been going down new paths my whole career, and this is just another direction. So it doesn't scare me, and I look forward to the opportunity. It's kind of the culmination of where I've been in the entertainment business my whole career, and this is just the next level. And I think you will see in the next 18 months there will be a hit series, there will be an NFT and a Web3 movie that's created, there will be a Web3 audience in music, and so creativity is going to be shared even in the live action and the real world that you may see. People are flocking to immersive experiences, the immersive art experiences, theater experiences. So the Web3 is going to experience the world sitting in your computer. There'll be a guy from Mike's farm in the Midwest who his dream was always to go to Paris and see the Eiffel Tower, or to go to visit a tea plantation in India. They'll be able to make these journeys. So, you know, I used to think recently that it was the end of globalization with the political and tribal events that are taking place in the world. But I think, you know, the thing is about cryptocurrency and Web3, it unifies the planet Earth. And I think it will continue to, and I think there will be the step towards globalization will continue in the future. So that's what I expect in the next 15 months.
I want to add that during the making of Tron, there were two camps on the Disney lot. There were the people that were scared by Tron and the people that embraced it and thought it was exciting and was going to lead to something new without even fully knowing what that something would be. John Lasseter, who started Pixar Animation, being one of those people. And Donald and I and the group of people that we still work with chose to not be scared, you know, to not let our fears dictate our behaviors. And we're still doing it. And that's, I think, you know, to me, that's the camp that we've always been in. That's the camp that we're in now. And there's a level of excitement that we recognize around Web3 that very much echoes what we felt. And those feelings never go away. What we felt during the making of Tron at Disney, it's the same kind of thing. There's people that are scared of it, and there's people that are not. Give us the people who are not. Give us the people who don't let their fear dictate their behaviors, and that's our community.
We'd like to end each episode of the podcast with a prediction-related question. And I'm conscious, Donald, you may have touched upon this in one of your previous answers, but nevertheless, I'll ask you both the same thing now. What might we see in the Web3 space over the next 12 to 18 months? Mike?
Well, I'm just going to quote Donald. I mean, we're going to see hits emerge that we haven't seen before. Bored Ape Yacht Club was, you know, it's an anomaly with sort of what I would call flat NFTs. And we're going to see art dimensionalized in ways. AI is going to drive creativity and tap into the, you know, the global zeitgeist in a way that we have not experienced before. And it will happen at a tempo that we haven't experienced before. And it's exciting. It, you know, we want to surf that wave. And I think that I agree with Donald, there will be hits that emerge. There will be things that we haven't seen before in the form of animation and live action series that will be quite remarkable. And we're looking forward to it.
And Donald, is there anything you'd like to add there?
The hits will drive the community, and the community will build off the hits. It's what happened in the beginning of the use of not just the metaverse, but even in the use of, you know, what we're speaking on the computer, on the use of the internet. So it'll be a hit driven thing. You know, there was the iPhone created, everyone needed to have an iPhone, you know, everyone needed to have a TV, everyone needed to have a phonograph with records, everyone needed a radio in the time of radio. So we will see that in the next 12 to 18 months, and it will become very clear that the future lies in all these things. It lies in live action immersive events, and and it'll be in the immersive events in the metaverse as well. So,
and that farmer from Indiana that visits the tea farm virtually will form a partnership with that tea farmer in India to grow tea on that farm in Indiana. And so we'll see things manifest in the physical world that are first experienced virtually. It used to be the other way around. You know, there'd be something in the physical world and it would show up in a cartoon, it would show up in a film, and you go, oh, there it was, Los Angeles, 1953. we're gonna see architectures and characters and designs and relationships form in Web3 in virtual space that will then manifest themselves physically. I have a friend that works at Amazon. She has 70 people on her team. She has not met 90% of them. They've been working together virtually, and they're gonna get together physically for the first time in April. And they're all very excited about it. And that's really, you know, a dynamic it's kind of changed the dynamic. You know, you can have sex with someone and then meet them in the real world physically. That never happened before the internet. Wow. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the physical space as well as in the metaverse and the virtual world.
And one last request, gents, if I may, can we get you back on later in the podcast series to revisit some of these predictions and take a bit of a further look at how the Cryptosaurs project is developing?
Of course.
Brilliant. Thank you, Donald Kushner and Mike Bonifer, for being so generous with your time. A real pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
So there we have it, episode one of You, Me and Web3. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Do keep an eye out on our social media platforms for the announcement of our next guest. And until then, take care.